How many of you have been to Smith Mountain Lake in Virginia? Anybody besides my family? Awesome. Okay, couple. So the first picture here, thank you. First picture is of Smith Mountain Lake or at Smith Mountain Lake. Can you see that well enough? Do you see a bunch of carp? Okay. So we vacation. Yeah, Josh, like, argh. So we vacation at Smith Mountain Lake as a family for many, many years. Some friends of ours had a cabin on the lake, and one of the things we would enjoy doing would be to cross the lake, go to Marina. I don't know if it's this specific place that this lady is at. I know she's at the lake, but we would go to Marina, and you could buy popcorn, instant popcorn, and throw popcorn out. And you would look, and there was nothing that appeared in the water. But then, as you threw popcorn out into the water, then all of a sudden it would just, you know, all these carp. And so, what we see in Genesis 1, it talks about let the water swarm with swarming things. And this is kind of the image I get. So much so. Now, I didn't realize this, and maybe this wasn't a thing when we used to go, but notice this next picture here. Some have even begun to put peanut butter on their toes and then put their toes in the water and let the carp suck the peanut butter. Anybody up to doing that? Some of you would be brave enough. Angelo says, Josh says no. Samuel's like, yeah, all right. So that's a little strange, but, you know, it's swarming with swarming things. And we see, you know, just a part of God's creation. So let's look at Genesis chapter 1. And here we see the first living creatures are made. Now you say, now hold on, Pastor. We've already seen that plants were made. Aren't they living? Yes, but not the same as animals and birds and fish, and certainly not the same as humans. So plants are living organisms, but we see a term, and we'll get into it here in just a few seconds, that it conveys a whole lot more meaning to living creatures, and it's a term in Hebrew called nephesh. So we see at the beginning here, day 5, that the first living creatures are made. So think about this as we kind of compare vegetables and vegetation to living creatures. Some of you are, I think many of you are young enough to remember this group here in the next slide. Who is this? VeggieTales, right? VeggieTales. So this was a staple around our house and in our van for several years. I think one reason that VeggieTales and Silly Songs with Larry were popular is because it kind of plays on our imagination as humans to think that you could have, you know, tomatoes and squash and cucumbers and zucchini and things that will talk and sing and do funny things and silly things all the while teaching, you know, biblical truths. But it's just that. It's our imagination. You won't ever see a tomato talk to you or a cucumber, you know, and funny songs. You don't see those things. So there is a big difference, obviously, between vegetation, vegetables, and living creatures. Some who are in the medical field might appreciate this next idea a little bit more. So the next slide. That one, yes. Persistent vegetative state. Well, we get that from the idea of the difference you see of vegetation and vegetables. So even in humans, when there's just not really much activity, that's kind of how we refer to that. Well, they're in a vegetative state. They may still be alive, but it's just not really life as we know it. Genesis 1:11 says, "And God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, each according to its kind, on the earth. And it was so." One commentator put it this way, he's kind of summarized that passage, and he said, let the earth vegetate with vegetation. And so let the earth sprout vegetation, or let the earth vegetate with vegetation. And then in Genesis 1:20, "And God said, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens." So the same commentator kind of summarized that passage as, let the waters swarm with swarming things. Now let's look at some differences. As you have fish and birds and animals and then humans, so they're even among living creatures, even among those that would be referred to as a nephesh, there's vast differences, and we begin to see those already in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. So fish and birds, Genesis 1:20, we just read, God said, let the water swarm with swarms of living creatures. Let the birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens. And then animals, we'll see this, Lord willing, next week in verse 24. God said, let the earth bring forth what? Living creatures, again, according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things and beasts of the earth according to their kinds. And it was so. And then two verses later, Genesis 1:26, then God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. And then here we begin to see some big differences. And let them have dominion. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. But then notice Genesis 2:7. Then the Lord God formed the man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And the man became a living nephesh, a living creature, a living nephesh. So you begin to see already some vast differences between you and between me, between us as a congregation, from the betta fish that sits on our kitchen counter and from the plants that you might have in your room or on your back porch. There are some vast differences, and we'll even explore those even more in the couple weeks ahead. The lexicon at BibleHub.com says this, nephesh occurs roughly 754 times. It's a very common term throughout the Old Testament. Encompasses the whole range of human and creaturely life, the living being itself, the animating life force, the inner self with its thoughts, emotions, desires, and even the life that may be forfeited in death. So because of that, in our English translations, you'll see this word translated in many different ways. Life, soul, desire, heart. You'll see it translated in many different ways, and that's because it can embody several concepts of all of life as a living nephesh, a living creature. Context rather than a single English equivalent, lexicon says, determines whether translators render it as soul, life, person, creature, appetite, or even some other related ideas. So there is a huge difference between plants that were started or created rather on day three and even from the fish and the birds and the animals that we see in day five and day six compared to us as God breathed into Adam the breath of life and he became a living creature or a living nephesh. God made all the living creatures of the waters. Genesis 1:20, God said, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures. Genesis 1:21, so God created the great sea creatures. Now, this is interesting because right away, in just a few verses and just really in a couple phrases, God makes it very clear through his revealed word that the smallest of the creatures that swarm, that swim around or that exist in our lakes and creeks and oceans, the smallest things God created on that day, but also the great sea creatures. It wasn't this long process that started with these little bitty things and then grew and grew and grew until you get the humpback whale and the great sharks and the dolphins and things like that, and even other creatures that have become extinct even before our time. God made all of those on the same day. They were feared by man. After the fall, these creatures, these great sea creatures, were feared by man. One is very intricately described in Job 41. Anybody remember the name? Leviathan, right? It's Leviathan. Job 41 and verse 1. Can you draw out Leviathan with the fish hook? And some of you fishermen are like, boy, I'd like to try. Can you draw out Leviathan with a fish hook or press down his tongue with the cord? And then verse 25, when he raises himself up, the mighty are afraid. At the crashing, they are beside themselves. So this describes some huge sea creature that God is revealing to Job. Listen, as he reveals a lot of things to Job about how different and how vastly separated is Job's understanding from God as Almighty Creator, and he picks out Leviathan as one of the examples, and he says, hey, can you press down Leviathan's tongue? Can you pull it out, you know, with a hook? And then he reveals, men are afraid at this. Some of you a few months back may have seen this report. Humpback whale swallows and spits out kayaker in incident captured on camera. Anybody watch that little video clip? I've watched it several times. I think it's amazing. I guess maybe it just brings back memories and stories of Jonah in the Bible, right? Okay, so this was off the coast of Chile, and 24-year-old Adrian Simancas, he was out kayaking with his dad. The video clip, if you watch it later, you see him kayaking, and then all of a sudden, you see like this big thing come up in the water, and then you don't see Adrian anymore. And then you see him again, and he's, you know, the whale, like, he's like, no, I don't want him, and spits him back out, and he's, but what you do see is a 24-year-old young man who was brave enough to go out on the open waters, chilly waters off the coast of Chile. I did not mean that, but was brave enough to do that, but yet after this happened, he frantically tries to get over close to his dad. And he's like, you know, talking, and his dad is like, tranquilo, tranquilo, you know, like, calm down, you'll be okay. As humans, we have a respectful fear for some of these, even today, some of these things that we know as great sea creatures. Now, some of you are braver than I am. How many of you have been to New Smyrna Beach within the last couple of years? New Smyrna Beach, I knew Samuel had. Yes, okay, so that's what I was looking for. Samuel has been there, he's brave. Why? Because New Smyrna Beach is the shark bite capital. But Samuel's like, yep, I'm going. Here we go. We have a respect. Lord willing, next Sunday after church, we'll probably head to Hot Costco, get a few things, and then head on down to Destin. We're excited about that. We love to spend time, you know, at the water, on the water, in the water. But I guarantee you, if a shark is sighted, we will be running out of the water very quickly. And Kim would probably never get back in the water the whole week if that happens. But we have a respect for some of these great sea creatures. I forgot to mention to you, the humpback whale, it weighs about, or up to 40 tons. You think about that? Weighs up to 40 tons and can reach up to 60 feet in length. 60 feet in length. You put 10 six-foot guys head to toe like that, 60 feet. Lifespan of a humpback whale is known, is unknown, but it's estimated to be about 80 to 90 years. Just a phenomenal example of God's creation. They're feared by man, but they're still controlled by God. So even this great Leviathan, God reminds Job, hey, I'm in control. I command, and I'm in control of even these great sea creatures that I created on day 5. Psalm 104 and verse 25, it says, here's the sea, great and wide, which teems with creatures, and this is important to think about, innumerable. Scientists have done their best to estimate how many, you know, fish and things are in the sea, and they put the estimate in trillions. Trillions. And God's word just says flat out here, which teems with creatures, innumerable, living things, both small and great. And then verse 26, there go the ships and Leviathan, which you formed, the psalmist is saying, which you formed, God, to play in it. So this great, huge sea creature, and the psalmist recognizes, rightly so, God, you created this great Leviathan to play in the waters, the seas, and the oceans that you formed. Job 41 and verse 5, will you play with him, God asked Job, the Leviathan, as with a bird, or will you put him on a leash for your girls? No one is so fierce, verse 10, that he dares to stir him up. Who then is he who can stand before me? Who has first given to me that I should repay him? Whatever is under the whole heaven is whose? Is mine. God reminds Job, listen, even the great Leviathan that you greatly fear and all other men would fear, you can't put him on a leash to take a walk with your girls. You can't do these things, but everything, including Leviathan under heaven, is mine. He's controlled, they're controlled by me. So similar to how God clearly stated that he made the greater light and the lesser light, he made the sun and the moon, even though cultures all around Israel often would worship the sun and would worship the moon and would worship the stars, in the same way, some of the Egyptian mythology, some of the Mesopotamian mythology had this idea that these great sea creatures were sometimes deities or were in rebellion against gods, and they were greatly feared. And God says, I made them. I made even them. Right here in Atlanta, in the Georgia Aquarium, we get to experience some not so fearsome creatures, but you get to see some of the dolphins. And just humans don't control the dolphins. Humans can train and humans can do some fun things with dolphins, but who gave the dolphins those capabilities? Obviously, God. And it's amazing to watch that. It's one of my favorite things to do as we go to the aquarium. Just a quick thought, you know, as we talk about humans having dominion over fish of the sea, the birds, livestock, and all that, have you ever been to a humanarium? Of course not. You've been to the Georgia Aquarium, perhaps. Maybe you've been to the Tennessee Aquarium in Chattanooga. But to my knowledge, we don't have, at least yet, who knows what crazy things the world might do, but we don't go to humanariums. We don't go to watch just other humans, you know, in glass things. We have dominion, and we should be good stewards of what God's given us and the fish and the birds and all that. God created all the other creatures. So yes, he created the great sea creatures, but then it says in Genesis 1 and verse 21, so God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves with which the waters swarm according to their kinds. So the creeks, the rivers, the lakes, the oceans immediately began to swarm, to be inhabited by all these different types of fish and creatures that God made. One of those would be the archer fish. So the archer fish is the way that it's formed, it's got a special groove kind of in its mouth. As it closes, then it can spit water out up to 5 feet very accurately, and that's why it's called and known as the archer fish, and knock bugs off of leaves, and then the bug falls in the water, and the fish goes, boop, I got you. Now, is that the only way that archer fish can feed? No. They can feed like some other normal fish feed in the water. So this seems to be something that God just kind of created them just to be interesting, that they can spit water out of their mouth for 5 feet and knock these little flies off the things. What about hermit crabs and sea anemones? Am I saying that right? Anemone. I practiced this all week long, and like I know I'm going to say it wrong. So we've got hermit crabs and the sea anemones. The hermit crab doesn't have a shell of its own, but God made it in such a way where its body is twisted so that when other shells become, you know, available, so other things have gone out of the shells and this empty shell, then these hermit crabs can then inhabit and kind of borrow a shell for a while. And the bodies are twisted so that they can fit in there well. They walk by their two front little legs, but then their two back legs are made where it can grip the inside of the shell. And that's how God made them. But not only that, then these... All right, so... Nope, back again. All right, so it's kind of hard to see the detail here, but this is the hermit crab. This is the shell. And then here you have an anemone that attaches to the shell and protects a little bit or gives a little bit more protection, you know, to the hermit crab. But also, as the hermit crab eats some of the leftovers that the hermit crab doesn't eat, the anemone. Yeah, Kim's saying, say it right, David. So that other creature with the tentacles benefits from that. God made those in such a way where they benefit from each other. Next thing we see is, well, let me ask you this. How many of you this last week, maybe in a salad, maybe at a Greek restaurant, but you've had cucumbers? You've eaten some cucumbers. I have, okay? How many of you eaten a sea cucumber ever before in your life? You've eaten a sea cucumber. Oh, raise your hand high. Okay, wow, let's give them a hand. They've eaten sea cucumbers. So this is a type of, no, there's many different types, but the Woos have eaten something kind of like this. That's what we're going to have in our next church-wide lunch. We'll have a bunch of sea cucumbers. I don't think so. But what's fascinating about this, so the sea cucumber, these white spaghetti tentacle-looking things are actually part of their internal organs. That as a protective, you know, device, or when they're in fear, when they feel like they're in danger, they can like spit out, they can just kind of shoot out part of their organs that are toxic and serves as protection for crabs and other things that are trying to kill them. And then they can just like, they'll regrow, you know, those organs will just kind of come back in time. That's not the coolest thing though. So this same, the next slide will show, this same type of, this is another type of sea cucumber, but still, and then here you've got a pearlfish. And during the day, pearlfish will often go inside of the sea cucumber, kind of like a little day hotel, and just kind of like, you know, chill out inside of that thing. The pearlfish goes inside of the sea cucumber, that's right. That's weird. Isn't that weird? So Netflix had a special for a while. I didn't see it, but it's called Absurd Planet. And this is one of the things, the pearlfish and the sea cucumber was featured in, that this is super strange. You know, as the sea cucumber kind of opens and closes for breath, for lack of a better word, the pearlfish kind of is watching and is like, oh, it's open. Boop, I'll swim in. Hang out here for a while. And then at night, pearlfish kind of swims out. Could that just, these things just happen by chance? You know, these two get together and go, hey, why don't you come inside of me for a while? You know, just kind of hang out, and then at night you can go and, no. God designed these things, and we're still discovering as humans these amazing details in the deepest, darkest oceans that just remind us God, His creativity is far more than we can ever imagine. Beyond the fish, beyond the things of the sea, we begin to see that God made the flying creatures of the skies, the flying creatures of the skies. Birds display God's creativity and masterful design. I'm actually have a helper during part of this, so it'll be the red microphone. David is going to help me say some of these names. First one here.
Blazing albatross.
Try it again. We got it? Okay, good. Try it again.
Lazen albatross.
Lazen?
Lazen, yeah. It's an island in the Pacific.
Okay, like near Hawaii?
Yeah, it's about 500 miles away from mainland Hawaii.
Now, why did I pick David? David took these photos. Okay, so he took some of these pictures that we're going to see. That's just a sampling. Just a sampling of the almost, get this, 50 billion birds that scientists estimate are in our universe, 50 billion. This is just a small sampling of that, but the Lazen albatross wingspan is over 6 feet wide. It can sleep while it glides in the sky. Wouldn't that be nice? You know, wouldn't it be nice? I would love to be able to sleep while I drive. I mean, I don't even have to fly. I would love to be able to just be driving along and go to sleep. And sometimes I do, and I shouldn't. But, you know, I would love to be able to do that. But humans have not been able to evolve to that point yet. Or in essence, God didn't make us that way. But God did make the Lazen albatross to be able to even sleep while it glides in the wind currents over the ocean. It can easily fly hundreds of miles in a day. One was logged as having flown about 1,800 miles in a day. Wake Forest University back in the 90s tagged quite a few of the Lazen albatross and were able to log, and then would even send emails to classrooms all across our nation of students and classes that were following, you know, kind of where these birds were going for food. And I think the next slide may show. Yeah, so Wake Forest University tracked these. And then next slide. So this is some of them, I think it's the waved albatross, a similar species, lives off the Galapagos Islands, and then flies all the way to the coast of Peru for food. That's a long way for takeout. It's like, oh yeah, I'll just fly from this island and go all the way, you know, to Peru and get some food, and then, you know, come back. This is the oldest albatross that we know of at this point. 74 as of last year, and laid an egg at 74 years old. So the name is Wisdom. Yeah, this oldest albatross named Wisdom. One other thing about these that are, you can do the slide now. Yep, so another thing about these that are very interesting, not just with the albatross, but several of the, you know, seabirds, is they can drink the salt water. And then as they drink the salt water, there's special glands above their eyes that salt kind of goes through their system, comes up to the glands above their eyes, and then the glands kind of excrete is a grammar lesson for me this morning, so excrete out of the glands and then down the grooves of their beak and then back into the ocean so that they can drink the salt water as they fly hundreds of miles a day or wherever they're at. Just by chance? I believe not. I believe God specifically and sovereignly designed creatures like this in an amazing way. How about vultures? Help me out. What are you going to have for lunch today if you know what you're going to have for lunch? What do you think you're going to have for lunch today? A vulture. Wow. Don't go to eat with Dylan. Okay? Willie's Mexican? Yeah, don't eat Willie. I mean, like, you know, just go have some Mexican maybe, but... how about some, and maybe I'm not saying this right, carrion? Carrion? Anybody going to have some carrion for lunch? Some fresh carrion?
No. Leftovers.
Carrion is decaying flesh and basically roadkill. That's what carrion is. And that's what vultures feast on. We are the most advanced beings that God created. However, we have not formed the capacity, as I've seen even this last week, roadkill, we haven't formed the capacity to be able to stop our car, get out, throw the roadkill in a cooler, and go home and fry it up or grill it and be okay. And just the thought of that, some of you are like, oh, Pastor, that's disgusting. It is disgusting. But God made vultures in such a way where that is exactly what they eat, and they don't get sick. They have, as we have bacteria, as in our, you know, in our system, but the vultures have bacteria that it's called Fusobacteria. It's a flesh-eating bacteria, as well as Clostridia, and enables them to eat, to digest, and even profit or benefit from this carrion, from the decaying flesh. And basically roadkill that we see. The red-cockaded woodpecker. All right, this next one. It's a woodpecker that is phenomenal to think about. The rat snake, one of the commentators provided some of the details of this, but the rat snake is the woodpecker's main predator. So this particular woodpecker will drill holes below. So it creates its own hole in living trees. It doesn't just find a hole. This woodpecker actually will peck, 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 peck until it creates its own cavity that it can go in. But then below that cavity, below it and above it, will peck smaller holes where the sap flows out of the tree and makes it more difficult for the rat snakes to climb up or to, you know, go up the tree and get it. Just part of God's amazing design of what this bird can do. This bird will peck 500 times a minute, 500 times per minute, or in essence, about 8 times per second. For most of us humans, there are a couple runners in the room, but for most of us humans, this would be the equivalent of us running as fast as we possibly can into a tree 500 times in a minute. This woodpecker, as you notice here, there's no special like NFL football helmet that it wears. It's just how God created it. That it can, and we don't have this type of woodpecker, I don't think, but we have woodpeckers that wake us up sometimes on our house and aggravate us. And I take Michael's little Orbi gun. They don't hurt the birds, but I just try to scare them. They're like little rubber things, and I try to get the woodpeckers away. This one is God's amazing creation. And notice the next slide of one of the ways that he created it. So the tongue kind of wraps around the brain in such a way that as it peck, 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 that tongue provides a cushion around the brain for protection and protects that little bird's brain. All right, Dave, I'm going to need your help again. So let's go through these and tell us the name of the bird, and if you remember, maybe where you took the picture.
Yeah, this one is called an e-evee, and I took this one in Maui, Hawaii.
Okay. Next one.
This is a green-tailed towhee. It's basically a big sparrow. I took this one in southern Arizona. Audubon's oriole, South Texas. Stellar's jay, this one is in the coast of California. Golden eagle, I took this one in Montana. Black-neck stilt, also in Arizona, but all over the U.S. Red-tailed tropic bird, Kauai, Hawaii. Paraloxia, desert cardinal, otherwise known as, took this one in California. Tree swallow, also in California, but this one also lives all over the U.S.
Let's give David a hand for these pictures, right? I mean, those are phenomenal. But again, those are just a few of like 50 billion birds that fly in our skies all over the universe. And this is what God says in Genesis 1:21. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves with which the waters swarm according to their kinds and every winged bird according to its kind. And it says, and God saw that it was good. And God saw that it was good. Can we just say that phrase together? Okay, let's say it again. 1, 2, 3. And God saw that it was good. One more time. And God saw that it was good. Birds are under God's command and care. Genesis 1:22, and God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas and let birds multiply on the earth. I don't know that I had really ever thought much about that first part of the phrase in my close to 50 years of life. But this time in reading and studying, and God blessed them. Never once have I passed the betta fish that sits on our kitchen counter and thought, I'm going to bless the fish today. And never once have I been out about to leave to take our kids to school in the morning and go, let's have a minute of blessing prayer for the betta fish. But God blessed the fish and the birds. God blessed them. But then he gives a command, and it's similar to a command that we as humans were given, be fruitful and multiply. And then this is where it becomes different. Fill the waters and the seas and let birds multiply on the earth. God gives them a command. They are under his care for sure. Yes, he blessed them, but also under his command, under his control. 1 Kings chapter 17, we will see something that God commanded specifically. Go back to the ravens. Yep. So God commanded specifically ravens to feed Elijah. And just, again, a reminder that God can do that. He made all of these. And so anytime God can just say, oh, yeah, I'm going to send some ravens. This was millennia before Uber Eats was ever thought of. There were no pizza delivery guys. But God says, Elijah, I've got you covered. I'm going to take care of you. And we see this in the passage here on the screen, 1 Kings chapter 17 and verse 1. Now Elijah the Tishbite of Tishbe in Gilead said to Ahab, as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives before whom I stand, there shall be neither dew nor rain these years except by my word. And then verse 2, and the word of the Lord came to him, depart from here and turn eastward and hide yourself by the brook Cherith, which is east of the Jordan. You shall drink from the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to feed you there. Elijah, I've already prepared your meals. The meal prep is done. I've already got it taken care of. I've commanded the ravens to feed you there. And then verse 6, and the ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook. And then about 800 years later, Jesus, as he's teaching, it's one of the longest sermons that we have recorded. It's not the longest, but it's one of the longest. It's the Sermon on the Mount. And in Matthew chapter 6, the latter part of the Sermon on the Mount, he begins to talk about and challenge his disciples, other devoted followers, and then there were those who were just curious. And he begins to challenge them and says, listen, you have a tendency to worry and to be anxious and to want to try to prepare and provide for yourself in this way and that way. And then he points to the sky, or at least he directs their attention, and he says this in Matthew 6 and verse 26. He says, look at the birds of the air. Now, I don't know. I'm not sure if there were birds flying across the sky at that very moment. God could have orchestrated that. But he says, look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? So as he ends this sermon, he's reminding them, listen, I care for the birds of the air, and I want you to look at them for a minute. I want you to consider how I care for them and how I provide food for them. Are you not more valuable to me than those birds? And then the obvious answer is yes. And so he goes on with the resulting response that we should have to him in Matthew 6 and verse 33. So seek first, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Jesus said, even these necessities of life, of like food and clothing, I don't want you to be anxious and I don't want you to worry. And the Bible teaches about the importance of work. So I'm not saying we should be lazy and not work. But God says, these aren't things that you need to worry about. If I feed the birds in the sky, you're more valuable to me than them. And so seek first God's kingdom and all these other things I will provide for you. There's no doubt that many of you, if not all of us, have struggled with just the reality of what happened this past week. It's surreal to me. Charlie Kirk is not the first person to be assassinated, but it's just tragic. But yet, thankfully, Charlie Kirk sincerely believed the words of Christ in Matthew 10 that says this, Matthew 10 and verse 28, do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. Or in other words, not one little sparrow will die that God doesn't care about, that God's not aware of. But even the hairs of your head, Jesus says in Matthew 10 and verse 30, even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. And some of you may have seen the post that Charlie Kirk put up about 4 days before he was killed. And it was this, Jesus defeated death so you can live. And he is experiencing that victorious life right now. My heart grieves for his wife. My heart grieves for his children. But my heart doesn't grieve for him because he was confident, and I fully believe with all of my heart that he's experiencing life as none of us can even imagine in the presence of his Savior. And so as Jesus points to the birds, remember that he cares for you infinitely more. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 14, for the love of Christ controls us. Some versions say compel us, because we have concluded this, that one has died for all, therefore all have died. And he died for all, that those who live might no longer live for themselves, but for him who for their sake died and was raised. So Paul says, this is what compels me. This is what controls me as I look at the love of Jesus for me and that he gave his life for me. boy, I want to live and return my life for him. To this day, there are Jews, unfortunately, and many of them who don't know God the Son, Jesus Christ, but yet the truth is the same in Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 and 5. And for years and years and years, this has been a common Jewish prayer. Hear, O Israel, the Lord, our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, or in Hebrew, nephesh, and with all your might. Does that phrase sound familiar at all in the New Testament? Is it anything in the New Testament reminds us of that? The greatest commandment, Jesus says in Matthew 22. He was asked, hey, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus said in Matthew 22, verse 37, this is it, that you would love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul. It doesn't use Hebrew, but the idea is the same because it comes from the Old Testament. With all of your nephesh, meaning all of your very being, your breath, your emotions, your heart, your desire, everything that encompasses your life as a living being, as a living nephesh, a living human, that is how you're supposed to love me, with all of your heart. And so as we look at some of these interesting facts, I pray that way beyond that, that you'll be reminded of Jesus' words and say, look to the air, look up. And be reminded that as much as I care for the birds of the sky and I provide food for them, and I care when one of those sparrows dies, boy, I care for you so much more. And I want you to love me in return with all of your soul, all of your nephesh, everything that embodies your life. I want it all in return.